Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hell's Kitchen when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments, because they've been banned from our public schools, they're banned from our public institutions, and they've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. And I contend this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? That's right. She can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. Now, the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers not only practiced, they advocated the Ten Commandments, and they put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school, at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether you call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, you know, it's automatic. It works like AIDS, herpes, and VD. AIDS, herpes, and VD just happen to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, once more, a little slower, that'll be 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. We're reviewing the book called Hell's Kitchen, and we've learned quite a bit. We've learned that the reason that we're having so much obesity and bad health and disease in America is because we don't have wood ashes to eat or to put on our gardens. When we had wood ashes that we were putting on our gardens, we had better health. And looking at the period from about 1880 until the present, about 125 years, in that 125 years, we've seen our health just go to pot. And we've taken a look at some other groups and cultures of people around here that still use wood ashes, and their health has not gone to pot. So Joel Wallach, the author of the book called Hell's Kitchen, comes to a very startling and revelatory conclusion. He says, you know what the problem is? We are mineral deficient. We've got 450 diseases. We're good at diagnosing those diseases. We're good at treating those diseases. But we don't know how to prevent them. And so he's got a prevention. What you need is to put a mineral block on your dining room table and lick on it as you walk by. That's his more humorous suggestion. It's true, and that's what makes it humorous. But most Americans, probably, you know, around the world, most people in general, don't want to run around licking on a mineral block on the dining room table. First of all, they would think it's unsanitary, which it may be. I'm not saying that it is or isn't. I'm just saying that you've got to get the mineral somewhere or another. So mineral supplementation is the solution to the problem. If you can't put your ashes like I can here, I take my ashes out of the furnace, out of the wood stove, and I put them down in my garden. If you can't do that, well, then we have to come up with another solution. So you can buy these minerals in a supplement form. And then you can take your Flintstone vitamins. Well, in 1761, the colonial kitchen with its huge stone fireplace was the center of family and community life, rather than the church or the parlor. In the other rooms, the rafters could be bare and the floors made of earth or raw hewn boards. However, in the kitchen, there was room enough near the hearth for finishing your chores and for children to play and watch their mother cook and prepare meals in large iron pots. On the hearth's back bar were hooks of varying lengths called tremels, hakes, pot claws, pot clips, and pot crooks. There were also lug poles, job crooks, recons, gallows bulks, and gallows crooks, and it's on these devices that the housewife hung pots and kettles. In the kettles and pots were hasty puddings and cornmeal porridge, while corn dumplings were baked on the side. Now, if the colonist traveled, he took with him no cakes or Indian corn, which is an ear of corn parched in ashes and carried in a leather bag. He took with him something called no cake. That isn't that he didn't take any cakes. He took no cake. It's called Indian corn. Now, since the advent of commercial electrical generation in 1882 by Edison, there's been a persistent, incessant, and accelerating search for more uses of electrical power. Some of the more interesting inventions of progress include electrical, coal, gasoline, oil, natural gas, and propane kitchen appliances. They were marketed as instruments of progress that would free the American housewife from the old drudgery and the dirt associated with the starting of the kitchen and heating wood or coal fires. These new stoves were cleaner. They were more efficient than the old wood stoves. No more soot to clean from your pots and pans. Now, the new electrical technology was proof that things could only get better. However, no one even considered the possible side effects on the world when we made the conversion from wood and coal fuels to electric, gas, and propane. Where would our natural minerals come from now? We still needed our essential minerals, yet no one seemed to worry about the looming deficit. We had been using the wood ash kitchen byproduct for thousands of years as a supplement combined with table salt, culinary ashes they were called, and a fertilizer for our gardens. It would be gone in a few short years, and we would be put metabolically naked into the ovens of Hell's Kitchen. And when one looks at the timeline following the 1882 quickening of the commercial electric industry, the more frightened we should all become. As we achieved the next plateaus of scientific achievement, including medical miracles, nuclear power, space technology, we sped up technological progress, but we left our primal human needs for mineral nutrients in the empty kitchen, the empty ash bin. The result of our failure to appreciate our loss, our failure to replace the ash minerals that we had depended upon for literally thousands of years, has become a whirlwind of obesity, diabetes, and metabolic syndrome. So he points out, take a look, cause and effect relationship. I'm sure Thomas Edison didn't sit there and say, gee, I'm going to invent electricity, put a generating plant in, move you to an electric cooking stove so that I can kill you with obesity because I'm taking away from you your wood ashes. Probably never entered his mind. Until this series of programs, probably never entered your mind. Didn't enter mine. Now, I've known about wood ashes. I've known that they were good for the soil, but I didn't know why. I put the wood ashes on the soil because you got to have some place to get rid of the damn things. That stuff is dirty, and it flakes out. You know, it goes up in a cloud of dust. That's what it is. It's just dust. And it gets on your shelves, and it gets on the window ledges, and the wife is always cleaning up after this dirty ash, this wood ash mess. It's been that way for thousands of years. You can readily understand why housewives say, wow, we can get rid of these wood ashes. We can get rid of half the dirt in the house. We can go to an all-electric kitchen. You know, we can be modern. All right, but there was a side effect that came from it. Now, in May of 1925, the Postum Cereal Company, Limited of Toronto, Canada, placed an ad in the Delineator magazine to market Grape Nuts Flakes. That was a wheat and oat cereal. It said, can we add years to our lives, increase our strength and vitality, and overcome our most dreaded diseases by what we eat? Yes, say the foremost authorities in the world today. Age-old diseases, breaking down of the heart, hardening of the arteries, disease of the kidneys, nervous and digestive disorders are developing more frequently in younger people with each succeeding decade. Death from these diseases has increased 100% in 30 years. There can be no longer any doubt that our food is one of the most important factors contributing to this condition. In your choice of food lies the difference between real health and that dangerous condition of low vitality that leads to trouble. Okay, that's an ad put in by the Post Company to sell Grape Nuts Flakes. So, yeah, we're all in agreement. Yeah, our food contains the nutrients, but now you've got a new processed food called Grape Nuts Flakes, which is the problem to start with. Has anybody ever thought about eating the oats and the wheat in their natural form? Or just take the oats and cook them and then eat them? I mean, it's a wild new idea. It's a wild new scheme, but I just thought I'd throw it out there for your consideration. Now a new table salt that prevents goiter. Save children. Nature's iodine restored, yet tastes no different. Goiter that threatens almost every child can now be prevented by this new salt. Now, physicians, this is the Morton Salt Company of Chicago, Illinois, April 1925. Are you listening to this ad? They advertised in the Woman's Home Companion to market iodized salt. This big corporation recognized that there was a problem, that people were iodine deficient. So they came up with a marketing strategy, and they said, hey, let's put iodine in our salt, and then we'll market it to eliminate goiter. And it worked. Here in the United States, very seldom do you see any people with thyroid problems, enlarged thyroids, or with what they call goiter. Then it says, watch your children carefully for the signs of goiter, nervousness, depression, sluggishness. Then salt their food this new way. Now, physician, know its cause. It's an insufficient amount of iodine in the thyroid gland of the throat. Give the thyroid the necessary iodine, then disease cannot grip it. Okay, we learned that with goiter. We learned that with scurvy, rickets, all kinds of diseases we can treat and cure with nutrients. This is one that's treated with a mineral. So not talking about vitamin C now, talking about a mineral that cures this disease. Now, not less than 126 billion pounds of plant food material removed from the fields and pastures of the United States every year. That's 126 billion pounds every year. Most of this loss is from cultivated and abandoned fields and overgrazed pastures and rangeland. The value of the plant food eliminates, considering only phosphorus, potash, and nitrogen in this waste, as estimated on the basis of the chemical analysis of 389 samples of surface soil collected throughout the United States. The recent selling price for the cheapest forms of fertilizer materials containing these plant nutrients exceeds $2 billion annually. Of this amount, there is evidence to indicate that at least $200 million can be charged up as a tangible yearly loss to the farmers of the nation. These calculations do not take into account the losses of lime, magnesium, and sulfur. Well, in 1936, the U.S. Senate entered into the record as U.S. Senate document number 264. It was a reprint of an article from Cosmopolitan magazine which stated that our physical well-being is more directly dependent upon the minerals that we take into our systems than upon calories or vitamins or upon the precise proportions of starch, protein, or carbohydrates that we consume. The document's authors went on to tell us that, do you know that most of us today are suffering from certain dangerous diet deficiencies which cannot be remedied until depleted soils from which our food comes are brought into proper mineral balance? The alarming fact is that foods, fruits, and vegetables and grains now being raised on millions of acres of land that no longer contains enough of certain minerals are starving us, no matter how much of it that we eat. Now, this talk about minerals is novel and quite startling. In fact, a realization of the importance of minerals in food is so new that the textbooks on nutritional dietetics contains very little about it. Nevertheless, it is something that concerns all of us, and the further we delve into it, the more startling that it becomes. You'd think, wouldn't you, that a carrot is a carrot, that one is about as good as another as far as nutritionment is concerned, or nourishment is concerned. But it isn't. The carrot may look and taste like another and yet be lacking in the particular mineral element which our system requires and which carrots are supposed to contain. Laboratory tests proved that the fruits and vegetables, the grains, the eggs, and even the milk and the meats of today are not what they were just a few generations ago, which doubtless explains why our forefathers thrived on a selection of foods that would starve us today. No man today can eat enough fruits and vegetables to supply his stomach with the mineral salts that he requires for perfect health, because his stomach isn't big enough to hold them, and we are starting to turn into big stomachs. Now, no longer does a balanced and fully nourishing diet consist merely of so many calories or certain vitamins or fixed proportion of starches, protein, or carbohydrates. We know that our diets must contain, in addition, something like a score of mineral salts. It's bad news to learn from our leading authorities that 99% of the American people are deficient in those minerals, and that a marked deficiency in any one of these minerals, of the more important minerals, actually results in disease. Any upset of the balance, any considerable lack of one or another element, however microscopic the body requirement may be, and we sicken, suffer, and it shortens our lives. We know that vitamins are complex chemical substances which are indispensable to nutrition, and that each of them is of importance for normal function of some special structure in our bodies. Disorder and disease result from any vitamin deficiency. All right, let me pause right here. Goiter. Remember, we started today's program with goiter. The Morton Salt Company says, hey, listen, look what we're going to do. We're going to put iodine in the salt. Eliminates goiter. All right, well, we got 450 other diseases, just like goiter, rickets, beriberi. And these are nutrient deficient diseases. These are starvation diseases. That's what the bottom line to it all is. They're just nutrient deficiencies. We can cure all of our nutrient deficiencies by simply taking in the proper nutrients, and the way to do that is through supplementation. Now, you could, in theory, do it in your backyard garden. I mean, if you'd eat all of your food out of your backyard garden, you grew it all organically with open pollinated seed, put on wood ashes. After the wood ashes, you put on mulch and other nutrients for the plants. Stay away from chemical fertilizers and hybridized seeds. Yeah, you could probably do it. But you know, for about 99.9% of us, that's not practical. That isn't going to happen where you live in Philadelphia or Los Angeles or East Podunk, New Jersey. That isn't going to happen. So we've got to have a solution to our problem. It's not commonly realized, however, that vitamins control the body's appropriation of minerals, and in the absence of minerals, they have no function to perform. Lacking vitamins, the system can make some use of minerals, but lacking minerals, vitamins are useless. Now, several pivotal things were happening concurrently at this point in time regarding the health of Americans and the entire industrialized world. Now, great numbers of people moved off the land and the family subsistence farms, and they moved into the towns and cities to work in factories for cash wages. Second, urban families had eagerly shifted their kitchens and homes from wood and coal as a fuel for cooking and heating to electrical, that is, oil, gas, and propane appliances. There were no longer any ash byproducts to put in our gardens and mix with our food and table salt. Large, specialized farms and orchards growing wheat, corn, rice, soybean, citrus, and fruit use simple NKP, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium fertilizers for maximum yields. Few people put wood ashes in their gardens anymore. Gardens had become a toy of the serious hobbyist rather than an important source of food and minerals for the average American. And four, World War II was on the horizon. Technology star was rising. Infectious diseases were being wiped out by sewage systems, clean water, and improved personal hygiene antibiotics. Travel was easy. Just about every family had a car, commercial bus, train, and even air travel was cheap and widely available. Gasoline was 12 cents a gallon. This is back in 1940. Well, in December of 1937, the Edison General Electric Appliance Company of Chicago, Illinois, placed an ad in the Ladies' Home Journal to market the Hot Point electric range. This is 1937. It said, "This year, in homes all over the land, women are going to receive the priceless gift of freedom. Freedom from long hours of kitchen toil. Freedom from pot watching, from scouring soot-blackened pans and kettles, and from cooking failures. Day after day, for years to come, this new Hot Point range can be a source of joy and contentment in your home. It's modern, never smudges, and with the help of the amazing chef's brain, that's the automatic timer, it actually cooks whole meals without any supervision. Isn't that just special?" And so we bought into this technology. It sounded good, sounded logical, sounded like something that we all wanted. And by the 1950s, just about 100% of urban kitchens in the industrialized nations had an electric, natural gas, or propane stove and had a home heating furnace. Just about 75% of rural homes in industrialized nations had an electric, gas, or propane stove and home heating furnaces. Wood ashes were pretty much an inconvenience of the past. No more wood ash dust, no more spilled ash buckets, no more getting up early to rekindle the fire. And everyone marveled how wonderful life would be without ashes. Now, the average family was overjoyed to give up the drudgery of dealing with the ash byproduct of the old-fashioned kitchen and heating furnace or fireplace. However, they had unknowingly and even unwittingly and even eagerly given up something so basic to human health and life itself that it had been hidden, but hidden in plain sight. The lowly kitchen ashes. Now, we were now without the constraint, we are now without the constant stream of nutritional minerals in our diets that wood, peat, and kelp ashes had provided for tens of thousands of years. We were now rushing headlong, metabolically naked, toward the pandemics of obesity, diabetes, and metabolic syndrome, osteoporosis, arthritis, and Alzheimer's disease of the 20th and 21st centuries, and no one recognized the insidious loss, no one. Alzheimer's disease. Mineral deficiency, I think it's selenium. In fact, we didn't even know about this disease until about 1979. And Wallach points that out in the book. Hey, we got diseases that are coming online over here that we never even heard of before. In fact, that fulfills a Bible prophecy. God said he's going to lay some diseases on us that we'd never heard of before. Now, the last chapter, I want to cover some information. We're on page 189, which is called the Mineral Premix. Mineral premix. It's called culinary minerals. You can probably get ashes. I mean, you know, if you said to me you wanted me to send you some ashes, you know, I just take a 5-gallon bucket, you know, and put ashes in it and send it to him. You can get ashes dirt cheap from someplace and use those as culinary ashes. I'd want to get them pretty clean. I'd like to get them from, say, oak or some type of wood, you know, that's burned. You know, that's pretty good wood. Now think about it. The tree, when it's growing out of the ground, is taking minerals out of the ground, putting it into the wood fiber. You take that wood fiber, it's broken down by insects, you know, termites and ants and so on, and goes back into the soil for the upcoming trees, you know, that are growing in the forest. As these trees die and you bring them in and you burn them up, that minerals don't burn, you know, they're metals typically. Copper, iron, you know, doesn't burn. And there it is in that wood ash. And if you'll mix that wood ash with your food, you know, throw a couple of teaspoons or a tablespoon or two of wood ash into the pot of beans, put the wood ash into your salt shaker and shake it on your meat, you'll be getting the culinary ashes. I know this is kind of wild and off the wall. You probably never heard of such a thing. And, hey, this is too dirty. I wouldn't think of doing that. Well, go buy them then. Don't go buy your supplements in the health food store. But this is the equivalent of putting a mineral block on your on your dining room table and taking a lick when you go by. Let me give you a mid-course reminder here, and then we'll take a look at the mineral premix culinary minerals when we come back. Meanwhile, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School and ask for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. But these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, again, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, culinary ash, culinary minerals. Since before written history, wood ashes, that is, plant-derived minerals, were the most universally available fertilizer. Wood ashes were predictable. They were a fine particle-sized mineral dust and immediately available, a source of plant food that was produced every day in the human's daily life as a byproduct of cooking and the warming of our homes. The systematic cultivation and fertilization of land to commercially produce food was first written in 4000 BC in China. Chinese farmers used organic material, wood ashes, and silt reclaimed from streams and rivers that had been eroded from the hills and mountains to fertilize gardens and field crops. Now, wood ashes were universally available and contained a wide variety of plant-derived minerals that were easily available to the cultivated garden plants and directly available to humans as a source of nutritional minerals when mixed with table salt and applied to our food as culinary minerals. Now, culinary ashes were of great and absolute importance to human survival. Wood, peat, and kelp ashes were added to human food since before written history. The munchies, pica, and cravings didn't begin with the first potato chip or Hershey's candy bar. The munchies began with the first man, Adam, had the munchies. And from the first man to modern man, we were and we still are dependent upon plant source minerals. Food preparations in its earliest and simple form was raw meat or crudely cooked meat in fire. Food was immediately eaten or preserved briefly by cooking, drying in the sun, or by being salted. Now, salt was valuable, and salt was cherished. It was a substance that was traded ounce for ounce for gold and slaves in different cultures at different times. So as a result, salt was not squandered by simply eating it. It was mixed, it was cut, and it was diluted with wood, peat, or kelp ashes. And so with the simple act of extending salt with culinary ashes, humans, from the beginning of time, unknowingly acquired essential supplemental minerals. So historically, we have been connected with wood ash and minerals for thousands of years. Now he goes on, he tells a little story here about Malta. And on the island of Malta, the people over there developed in agriculture. And the agriculture at one time flourished, and then it declined, and then one day it just disappeared. So what happened? What happened to it? Well, the Malta experience, which goes back about 3,000 years, they got to the island and they settled. They cut all the trees off of the island and turned it into agricultural land. Then the agricultural land began to play out, which is what you see going on here in the United States today. And it began to play out, or peter out, as they say, because the soil never had a chance to rest, never had an opportunity to rejuvenate itself, to refertilize itself. Now, there's a process given us in the Bible called land Sabbaths and Jubilees. And once every 7 years, you're to let the land rest. And what grows of itself grows up, and then it dies down. And that material becomes the nutrients for the next 6 years in the cycle. You got a seven-year cycle, 1 year is rest. 6 years is productivity, then 1 year of rest, six cycles of productivity, and then rest. And then this goes on for 49 years, and then in the 50th year, you have this double rest, this double Sabbath. It's called a land Sabbath and a Jubilee. One time I was talking to a couple of Jewish fellows from New York that had a vineyard up there, a couple of partners, and I asked them if they practiced land Sabbaths and Jubilees, and they said, well, we've thought of it, because we spend $100,000 a year on chemical fertilizers, but we've decided not to chance it, not to go to organics, because of the tremendous cost involved in the transition. We know what we're going to get from our chemicals. We don't know what we're going to get by practicing land Sabbaths and Jubilees. And these guys, you know, they're producing $2-4 million a year worth of grapes. They bottle, it's a small winery. They bottle the wine and sell it. Pretty successful operation. It ultimately, like Malta, will break down. As the nutrients in the soil are depleted, as the soil is mined, just like mining a vein of coal, at some point in time, it'll run out. And you see that with the Maya Indians in the Yucatan Peninsula. We see that with the Aztecs, the Incas, the Maltese. We see it in Babylon, Assyria, Egypt. Everywhere where agricultural societies have worked the land for hundreds of years until they finally wear it out, and then it either turns into desert or the people have to leave the area and they go somewhere else, such as we see with the Maya Indians in Yucatan, Mexico. Same thing happened on Malta. And there was a collapse of the agricultural society, and that's what we're facing here in the United States. It'll ultimately be an agricultural collapse. This agricultural collapse is going to occur worldwide, and it's spoken of in the book of Revelation as a humongous time of dying. In fact, in Revelation 6, it has four events described there. One of the events is the starvation and the destruction of 25%, a fourth part of men die as a result of it. Talk about biblical proportions. A fourth of the Earth's population today is about 1.5 billion people in a sudden die-off. That's going to be big news when it occurs. Now, Joel Wallach points this out in this chapter. You see, the world's population of 6 billion could not have occurred from a wood-ash economy. Wouldn't have happened. So what we did was we went to the chemical fertilizers, because plants don't need 92 minerals. They only need 9. But the 9 minerals that the plant needs to survive and thrive, if that plant has available to it those 92 minerals, vitamins, and so on, it'll produce those for us so that when we eat the plant, we get all the vitamins and minerals, but the plant doesn't need all those vitamins and minerals. It only needs 9. So the plant can make it where humans can't. And as we devitalize our soil, we're actually living in a time bomb, or sitting on a time bomb, because ultimately the world's population growing from, you know, when I was a kid, 2 billion people to 4 billion, and now it's on its way to 8 in the next 20 years. The world can sustain the 6 to 8 billion people only from these chemical fertilizers, which are depleting the soil of its minerals. At some point in time, when the mineral depletion reaches a critical mass, there will be a great dying off of population. That's the time bomb that we're sitting on. It's happened in the past historically, and it'll happen again. Only this time we're going to have a humongous population. Now, the Mayas, when they died off, you know, for those people at that juncture of history, to them it was a catastrophe. To us, it's a footnote in history. We look at their civilization, we look at their ruins down there and say, wow, look at this. These people were real smart. Hey, these people had something really going for them. And it just collapsed. It just disappeared. What happened to them? We look at these civilizations. You know, archaeologists are out here digging around in the dirt. And then they dig up this civilization and they say, wow, look at this. Hey, these people were real smart. And then they just suddenly disappear from the world's history. What happened? Why? A collapse in their agriculture. That's what happened. And why? Because they never let the land rest. They never practiced land Sabbaths and Jubilees, just like we don't. Now, land Sabbaths and Jubilees are revelatory. They're not scientific. You know, science deals with experimentation. So we're experimenting. We got 6 billion people on the planet, and we're experimenting in agriculture. We're farming in monoculture, and we're testing. We're seeing whether or not this is going to work. So far, it's been working fine. It did not work fine for the Mayan Indians or for the Babylonians, Assyrians, or the Egyptians. Those civilizations all collapsed. They all collapsed over agriculture. You know, the Romans had a great civilization going, and they got their food and supplies out of North Africa. That's been turned into the Sahara Desert. Today, the Chinese are using up 100 square miles of their land every year, which is being turned into desert. While their population continues to grow, they're turning 100 square miles a year. That's 6,400. Let's see how much that is. 640 times 100. 64,000 acres a year. 64,000 acres a year in China. Well, you know, compared to 3.5 million square miles, you know, 100 square miles isn't all that big a deal. But, you know, not very much of the world's surface land area is agricultural land to start with. I think it's about 1 or 2%. That's it. And when you're out here destroying land at that rate, like the Sahara Desert, like Iraq and the Middle Eastern countries, you know, at one time those places had trees grown on. And now they're dependent upon irrigated agriculture like they are in Egypt and in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. And so in the Bible, God tells us about a collapse that's coming. It's called the Great Tribulation. You can read more about that in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, Revelation 6, 17 and 18, Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28. A lot of material in the Bible that talks about this inevitable collapse. Joel Wallach over here is pointing out that the reason for it is culinary ashes. Culinary ashes. You got to have the minerals. Now, of course, modern man can now take the minerals and synthesize them. Well, one of the problems is that these minerals, if you're going to take mineral supplements now, are going to have to be in a form that your body can assimilate. So on page 203, he has 60 minerals over here, trace mineral analysis of the multiple sample of juniper ash. And so he takes aluminum and chloride, copper, iodine, manganese, zinc, zirconium, tin, all of these various minerals over here. He's got a table. And here's the trace mineral analysis of a multiple sample of juniper ash, parts per million. So here's how many parts of sodium you find per million, and how many parts of silver you find per million. And he tells you story after story after story of mineral deficiencies that manifest themselves in disease, and then when you add the mineral, the disease goes away. It's a cause and effect relationship. It really isn't a big mystery. Now here's a little story about the Navajo Indians. The diets of the Navajo Indians have changed significantly since the pre-Columbian times. Archaeological data suggests that their early diet was the standard fare of hunter-gatherers and consisted only of indigenous plants and wild game until about 1200 AD, when a northern Athabascan tribe of Navajos migrated to the southwest and learned farming from the Pueblo Indians. Corn laced with culinary ashes became a staple in the Navajo diet. Two centuries later, the Spanish brought sheep and cattle, and the Navajo became shepherds. Now, today, the Navajo Nation numbers about 150,000, and it's the largest Native American tribe. In recent decades, many processed foods have been introduced into the Navajo diet as a result of government rationing, food distribution programs, and the growth of trading posts and food stores. Yet the tradition of culinary ashes being added to their food remains in the more rural areas. So away from the towns and the cities, these people are still using culinary ashes. Now, juniper ash proves to be a good source of dietary calcium, iron, and a moderate source of magnesium. One teaspoon of juniper ash provides the equivalent calcium levels found in one cup of milk. It supplies 28% of the recommended daily average for iron and 9% of the RDA for magnesium. The woody branches contain more calcium and silica, whereas the twigs and needles, the growth part of the tree, contain the highest levels of the trace minerals. A typical recipe that includes culinary ashes. Okay, let me pause here for a moment. The Navajo Indians, down in the southwestern United States, down around New Mexico and Arizona, they go out and they take these juniper trees, cut them up, burn them, and then eat the ash. In the new growth, you get more than in the old growth. Off of the limbs, you get more than off of the trunk of the tree. Wallach has a table here where you take the trace mineral analysis of a multiple sample of juniper ash and shows how when you use that, here are the parts per million. Here's the percentage that you get of minerals out of it. Now, if you mix one cup of juniper ashes with water and then strain through a glass brush into a basin of corn flour, using about 3.5 cups of the liquid. Add 1/2 cup of clear water to this greenish dough and then knead until thick. Shape with moist hands into round cakes less than 1 inch thick and 4 inches in diameter. Then bake it on a fire griddle or a fry griddle, rubbing it to the griddle with a cloth between bakings, and then moisten the cakes on both sides when it's done. Even today, the corn-based foods of the Navajo contain culinary ash, which is mixed with boiling water and added after straining to the blue corn flour to make it blue. Blue corn contains a pigment that turns a distinct greenish blue color in the alkaline medium created by the addition of wood ash. The wood ash was also used daily to make a tea, and it was used medicinally for stomach and intestinal ailments. Here's another little thought for you. When you're sick, you need vitamins and minerals. I think it was Dr. Linus Pauling that figured that out, that when you've got a cold, if you'll take massive quantities of vitamin C, your cold will last half as long and you'll heal up twice as fast. That's true with all diseases. There's 450 of these disease symptoms. You may have Lou Gehrig's disease or muscular dystrophy or cancer or something else. And the final analysis, you've been starved. Now, they go over to Okinawa. In 2003, a small group of our associates, including Blake Graham and Dr. Wallach, went to Okinawa to determine where these exceedingly long-lived people obtained their nutritional minerals. We went first to the Department of Agriculture, and we learned that the soil of the entire Okinawa area, the whole island, of 161 islands, was made up of red, yellow, or black clay. There's no coral calcium. Now, many large studies, including the 25-year-long Okinawa project that was conducted by 2 Harvard medical doctors, were produced in an attempt to determine the Okinawa secret of longevity. So we felt we didn't need to ask all of the detailed questions of diet, religion, exercise, and professions that they'd already asked over and over again. So we decided that we were going to ask only one question. What do you do with the wood ashes from your cooking and heating fires? Just going to ask you one thing here, you Okinawans. What do you do with your ashes? Well, we visited many of the Okinawa old ones and shared traditional meals of boiled pork, steamed sea vegetables, bitter melon, and squash with them. And we asked all of the old men over 100 years old, what did you do when the wood ashes from your cooking and heating fires every day, or with them rather? And the old men replied, we don't know. So we asked the Okinawa women of 90 and 100 years old or more, what did you do with your wood ashes from your heating and cooking fires each morning? And they replied with a big smile on their face, well, everybody knows that. We put the ashes into our gardens. And we added them to our rice to produce a rich yellow color. So the Japanese and the people of Okinawa used culinary wood ash. They preferred the hardwood trees for fuel because they burned hotter and burned longer. Unknown to them, the hardwood trees also contained considerably more minerals than the soft wood trees. A recent comparison of the mineral content of the bones from the modern Japanese and the 3,000-year-old bones from ancient Japanese monks showed that the ancient bones contained a wider variety of minerals and a greater amount of each mineral, and a testimony to the nutritional value of culinary wood ashes. The mystery of the Okinawa longevity had been solved by asking the question that no one had ever asked before. What did you do with the wood ashes from your heating and cooking fires every morning? Well, the simple answer was that they used them in their gardens as a fertilizer and in their rice as culinary ashes. So why do the people in Okinawa live longer? Why do the people of the Hunza tribe or the Hunza people up in the Himalayas live longer? Certain tribes in the Amazon and in Central and South America, why do they live longer? In Russia? Minerals. Every single case, it's minerals. That's the least common denominator. Now, how do you get the minerals? Well, up in the Himalayas, they get the minerals out of the glacial milk. In Okinawa, they get the minerals from the wood ash. And in almost all of these societies, these people use their wood cooking ashes in their gardens. They recycle them. They go out and gather firewood. They burn the wood. They take the ash. They put it on the garden. They eat the vegetables out of the garden. And they're getting the minerals back again. And they live longer as a result of it. This is not a longevity book, per se. But it certainly does tell us a big part of that story. So the mystery of the Okinawa longevity had been solved, and solved with culinary ashes. It is often said that familiarity breeds contempt. This human failing has cost us dearly. Over time, because wood ashes were dirty, they're inconvenient, and they're so old-fashioned, we lost our respect for, we lost our interest in, and our understanding of wood ashes. Wood ashes that were cherished by humans for thousands of years. As a result, we made a catastrophic error as we willingly and proactively gave up the drudgery of the wood stove, scorched pots and wood ashes, and then we moved almost overnight to electricity, natural gas, and propane household fuels. Now, we have to understand why we originally used wood ashes before written human history, and we should understand what we gave up before we can know how to replace
just like, you know, the alcoholics have to know that they're in trouble before they can begin to solve their problems. We can't replace wood ashes with pharmaceuticals. So we Americans have to get busy, because our window of time for healthful survival is rapidly closing. If we keep doing that, or what we're doing with our health, our healthcare system will bankrupt us even before, as it fails to give us the bang for our health buck. Simply said, obesity is here to stay unless we supplement our diets with the plant minerals that we have so abruptly given up. So either we go back to these wood ashes, or we got to have supplementation. That's the bottom line. So is it very likely that we're going to see very much in the way of meaningful changes? Not at all. I do not expect the Congress or the Food and Drug Administration or the pharmaceutical industry or the American Medical Association or anybody else to come out here and say, okay, well, here's what the problem is. They all know what it is. The food industry knows what it is. That's why I said Morton Salt put iodine into the salt, solved the goiter problem. But in the process of doing that, when you solve the goiter problem, it doesn't make any money. How much money is being made off of thyroid medication by the American Medical Association? Hell, you can buy a pound of Morton Salt with iodine in it in the morning. You used to use iodized salt, and it solves the goiter problem forever. We can't make any money doing that. Oh, yeah, we know what causes it, and we know how to cure it. Now you do. You can do it for yourself. You can do it for your family. I can't do it for you, and I'm not going to. But you can do it for yourself. You can solve your own health problem. If you weigh 300 pounds and you got this big obesity problem, it's caused by starvation. It's caused by mineral deficiency. You can fix that. You can forget about diets. You're not going to diet, lose that weight. And liposuction isn't going to solve it. Cutting half your stomach out, that isn't going to fix your problem. Minerals is going to fix your problem. It's either minerals or just keep on living doing what you're doing. That's what the bottom line of the story is. Remember, this is Joel Wallach. This is Hell's Kitchen. And you can get a copy of Hell's Kitchen from BraveNewBookstore.com. It's just that simple. It costs you about $20. You know, it's a $25 bill with the freight. $25 well spent. All right, we're out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there and tell you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure you get one. Doesn't cost you anything. Remember to call 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.